Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas and ESPN Reno.
Rolling into hour number two here in Frisco, Texas. Adam Hill going to join us here in a couple seconds. We're getting ready for UNLV and Ohio in this cozy stadium here at the Ford Center. This is Jerry World, the smaller one. It's a crazy, crazy facility, crazy part of Dallas, north of the city. I guess it's called the Metroplex, right? The whole area, as UNLV will be taking on Utah in a 6 o'clock kickoff, 5 o'clock with the pregame show, the Ted Weans pregame show. We'll have conversations with Dan Mullen, conversations with a couple of the super seniors in this group. Has a bunch of seniors who are one and done, who came in, contributed, and did their job for the most part. So some good stories to tell. Adam Hill is here with us. Adam, is your mic on? There's a switch on that mic. I think you're good to go. No, he's not up yet. Might want to try the headsets.
There you go.
Okay. Yeah. It's hard. The on-off part gets complicated. I should have set you up. All right. So, first of all, give me your impression of the setup here. Have you been here before?
I have not. I'm also offended that you didn't ask me about my favorite Christmas songs, because I have a good list.
Do you really want to do this?
Well, no, I do. I do find there's some Christmas songs that I find hilarious.
Okay.
Like the fact that the greatest Christmas album of all time, which Bieber is on the list. You hit that one. The greatest Christmas album of all time is by the extraordinarily talented Ariana Grande, who tries to sex up every Christmas song that she does. It's one of the most impressive things I've ever heard in my life. It's absolutely the best of the Christmas albums.
I don't think I want to listen.
You've never heard it?
No.
First of all, it is good. That part is not a joke. The fact that she does try to go full Ariana Grande and just make every song like hot, it's impressive. But also, the album is very good.
I am going to say about the setup here, since we're talking music, I don't know that I ever thought that Shallow would be played hours before a football game as people are warming up on the field. Neither team is out. It's mostly the equipment people, but are we serious here with Shallow?
There's some players out here and coaches around here, I see, and some very illustrious figures.
It's a deliberate attempt to get everyone down in the dumps. Who are the illustrious figures?
Well, I meant, you know, Mr. Dolby.
Okay, there you go. My boss, yeah.
That's who I was looking at.
Boss. Yeah. Okay, so what? First of all, give me your impression of the facility.
It's cool. I went and walked around a little bit earlier. It's a long day because, you know, as we know in Vegas, the game's on at 6, but here it's 8 o'clock.
Yeah.
8 o'clock start, which is really good for both deadline and 5 a.m. flights back home for Raiders practice. That's good. That'll work out well. But, no, I think there's a lot of time today, so I get to walk around the city a little bit, walk around here at the facility. It's very cool the way that they built it. It's not, like, separated from everything like most facilities are. Like, Raiders are near some shopping districts but not part of them. Like, this is part of a shopping district with the stadium in here that they use for high school football for the most part, and then other events like this. Also, it was pointed out to me as we walked in, which I've never seen, but the Dallas Cowboy Cheerleader documentary or the TV show, the reality show, is shot here in this building. And then the Cowboys facility right next door, which is connected with a hotel, a bunch of bars, restaurants, things like that. So really cool. And then to have this, which I think is something, if the Raiders had it to do over again, they probably would do.
Yep.
Make their indoor into a functional stadium. But they didn't. Here they do have it, and it's cool that they can use this because this is not where the game's usually played. It's usually over at the soccer stadium, which is right around the corner. They moved it here because they're renovating the soccer stadium. But to be able to have a facility like this is cool. To be able to have a smaller football facility in town is cool.
Yeah.
Vegas doesn't have that and won't anytime soon.
Yeah, we probably need one that holds about 15,000 for special events. And I'm not saying this is the future of bowl games, but I think there should be more bowl games at places like this. Now, this is very unique, but there really is no need for most bowl games, some of the bowl games, to have more than 20,000 seats.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And, you know, especially bowl games of this level, which is a really cool game. I think it's really cool, especially as I wrote about this morning, that, like, most games you tune in, just like, all right, who's playing? This one, like, oh, everybody's playing. I mean, one of the coaches isn't here, but everybody's playing. So that part's cool.
Wanted to be, didn't opt out.
Sure, yeah, that's true.
What do you know about that story and the angle coming into this one with motivation from the Ohio side? I know Mullen has actually built it up with his team saying, hey, this guy who's the interim, this Hauser guy, he wants the job.
Of course.
So he's going to be driven.
Well, I think that's very true. And players, I'm sure, seem to like him. They'll probably play for him. I think that part is definitely part of the equation. It has to be some sort of distraction, but as Dan Mullen pointed out yesterday, look, the coordinators are still in place. One of them is the interim coach, but the coordinators are still the coordinators. They're the ones who do all the coaching, really, during a season. I don't think it changes much of that, but yeah, I think the motivation side is there to say, hey, this is a guy that deserves a job. He led us into a bowl game. He took over in tough situation and coached well. So I think that is part of the angle to this game for sure.
What is your top angle in the game? Because I have mine, but I want to hear what you came up with or what do you think it is going into the game.
The real one or the one that I just told you I have some breaking news on right before the show?
Either. You dictate. You go in what direction you want
to
go.
So people might know this already. I didn't. I guess I don't pay enough attention to the traditions of various bowl games. The winner of the Scooter's Coffee Frisco Bowl does not get doused in Gatorade. They get doused in a giant 3-gallon jug of Scooter's cold brew.
Oh, wow. Okay. I thought it was just going to be coffee grounds.
No, it's actual cold brew
that
is poured. Now, the breaking news, and this is a detail that I was 99% sure about, but I had to check with some sources just now before I came in here.
Good sideline material, too. I'm stealing this.
You should actually steal this. Well, maybe not. I don't know, because here's the thing. Dan Mullen despises coffee from everything that I know about him.
Really?
Yeah. I felt that was the case. I remember hearing that. I had to check on some things. It is true. Now, he is in the Scooter's Coffee Frisco Bowl. Don't fret. They do have a full menu of non-coffee beverages,
yeah.
One of which Dan Mullen was enjoying at the press conference yesterday. They have smoothies and, berry energy drinks.
They've got a couple of big banners here.
Yeah, they do. So it's not like sacrilegious to say, hey, he doesn't like coffee. He's in the coffee bowl. They have other beverages at Scooter's. But, no, he does not like coffee. So I wonder, close game at the end, does he start you got to tank a little bit so that they don't pour coffee on you if you don't like it?
Get
the quarterback or get the OC, something like that. Don't get it on me.
Sure, why not?
I think it's a big detail.
I think it is a big detail. And these games are trying to jazz it up more and more with their sponsor and, what they're dousing on people or what they're going to do post-game. So, yeah, we're getting ready for the Frisco Bowl here in Frisco, Texas. Adam Hill is up at the set. We're high above the field. It's really not that high. It's a small stadium, Ford Center. This is a little Jerry World in Dallas. Okay, what's the top angle? What's the other angle?
I mean, I think from UNV's perspective, it's the guys that are here, that are still around, at least for now, who have said they want to come back next year and be a part of it. And a guy like Anthony Calandria, who is coming off just an unbelievable season, everybody said, oh, there's no way he's coming back. He has said he will. Now, I think there are some complicating factors to that, potentially, that don't necessarily involve him. So we'll see how that plays out. But for right now, he says he'll be back here. And I think for him to get a jump start on next year, obviously to send out guys like Marcel McDuffie back in his hometown, essentially playing his final game, that's cool. But I do think getting a head start on next year with some of the guys that they have kept around in the program, like Jet Thomas and Calandria, I think is a big factor here.
Is the complicating factor Corey Dennis maybe leaving?
It is.
Where do you think he's going?
I would guess somewhere in the South region, in the maybe in the Georgia capital.
So he did an interview. That was public.
Yeah, okay.
At Georgia Tech.
All right.
Yeah, that came out about a week ago that he was there. That's interesting.
Yeah. And I would bet, now we haven't talked to Anthony about this. We don't know. He has done nothing but said he wants to be back.
Right.
I would guess if Corey Dennis is the offensive coordinator at Georgia Tech, Anthony Calandria is the quarterback at Georgia Tech. That'd be my guess.
Certainly a lot closer to home.
Yeah. Yeah,
in Florida. He's a Tampa guy.
Yeah. St. Pete? Is he Tampa? Well, it's the same region. But
yes.
But it's St. Petersburg.
It might be St. Petersburg. I was just referencing the area in general.
Well, we are hardcore Florida people, as you know. That I've been around there a lot. So.
Used to be.
Sure.
Haven't gone in a while. Won't go for a while. Adam Hill is here. It's Cofield getting ready for the Frisco Bowl. I'm glad you brought up McDuffie, because that is a very cool angle. And the angle is he's actually one of the few remaining guys from the Arroyo era.
Yeah.
And think about what those guys went through. If you go all the way back to the beginning of Marcus Arroyo's stay at UNLV, that was an 0-6 year in the COVID season where every week seemed like they were trying to beat the deadline to have 53 players, and then
right.
They just couldn't compete, and it was a terrible season. He wanted to erase it from his memory, so his second year he would call year zero, or maybe he would call that year zero, and second year was year one. But the fact that McDuffie, who could have gone to Purdue, that was a guy they offered. They offered more players than the nine they took, but McDuffie stuck around. Even guys like Wesley Mouvesi, who has been in and out of the rotation over the years, he became more of a key rotation guy. There are several players on this team, and Cam Frill, who was the offensive freshman of the year in the Mountain West Conference, he stayed around. So I think it's cool. They got to see the full build, and they were at the bottom, which that was very much the bottom for UNLV, and now three straight years of making a bowl game, and they have a chance here to pick up win number 31 in 3 years.
Yeah, and, I mean, what a journey for a guy like Marcel McDuffie. You talked about it yesterday, and I think the – you know, bowl games are bowl games. People feel how they feel about them. But for a lot of programs around the country, if you're a supporter of, you know, many universities, football teams, it's just expected they're going to be a bowl game every year. And then there's another layer of teams where, hey, bowl game's a realistic expectation every year. Every once in a while, you're not going to make it. But for the most part, you're at least going to be right there in contention to make one. This is literally the first time in UNLV history they've been three straight years. Like, they just haven't done this in their history. They don't have a tradition of every year expecting to win 10 games, and now they're at that place. And Marcel McDuffie was a big part of getting them to that level of seeing through all these different, incarnations of the program and the different coaches, and to now be here in this point to leave it in these hands. And as he talked about yesterday, leaving it in good hands. It's not like it's over. The UNLV is just kind of getting started in terms of being a power in the Mountain West. So I think that is a cool thing to look for, of like the transfer of eras of Marcel McDuffie finally being gone his last game, but then how, you know, he's left it in such good hands and such a good place going forward.
Yeah, we'll see if a guy like Tui Alamotu, who doesn't necessarily have a starting job for next year, but is one of the veterans coming back, and again, he does go back to Arroyo as well. I think the other cool angle going in is the commitment to the program by the players and all the coaches. And they did get a benefit of playing before Christmas, because if you're playing after Christmas, you're getting really close to that transfer portal date of January 2nd. But still, the majority of the team has committed to stay around. They wanted to go on the bowl trip. And I think that says a lot about Dan Mullen as a coach and the staff, that they like these guys, and their first thought at the end of the regular season slight postseason with a title game wasn't to worry about what's going to happen in the future. And sounds like a lot of the guys want to stay around. I still think they're going to have 15 or 20 transfers. We know how that works. It's not always a player's choice, but they've got everyone here. That's cool.
They do, and I think it says a lot about what he's, who he is, and how they've how they've taken to him, and how they like playing for him, and all that. But it also says a lot about expectations, right? Where if you had uncertainty about next year, about is this team going to be good? Are they going to be competitive? Are they going to compete for, say, a championship in the conference, potentially a playoff game? Then I think you'd have a lot more people, fleeing. And trying to get out and trying to find a place where you can have that kind of success. Like, they not only enjoy themselves in the program and the city and everything that the school has to offer, but also believe that they can have success. And I think that's a big part of it as well. And, Dan Mullen said yesterday it's also about who you bring in. Like, you bring in the right guys that want to be a part of that, then it helps, which is true. But I think just what they're building and the optimism that they're building going forward is what really kind of keeps people around.
Okay, last 20 seconds. What do you think will happen? High scoring game, or can Ohio control the game with its run game?
I think it ends up being pretty high scoring. Like, especially a bowl game like this, especially, I think you start to see some points, and I think it'll be fun. I think it'll be a fun watch, and we'll see if Dan Mullen gets cold brew or maybe avoids it after the game.
There you go. That's a big angle of post game if they do get the win. All right, Adam, we appreciate it. Coming up next, we're going to check in behind the counter with Ray Cleaver from William Hill.
It's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas and ESPN Reno.
All right, rolling out of the 4 o'clock hour. This hour is brought to you by Battleborne Injury Lawyers. 766-1400 is the number to call from anywhere in the state of Nevada. Dial 775 in the north. We're on in Reno and in Vegas. Getting ready for a big football weekend with busy, busy times on Christmas and then Saturday and Sunday in the National Football League. And, of course, the CFP coming up on New Year's Eve and on New Year's. And we always lean on Ray Cleaver from William Hill on these Tuesdays. We go behind the counter, get the skinny on what the guys who take the bets are looking at. Ray, what's going on, buddy?
Hey, Steve. Thanks for having me. Looking forward to a big week here.
Yeah, we got some good stuff coming up. We're getting ready for a UNLV game against Ohio. That line has been sitting at 7 for the last couple of days. I saw 6.5, a pretty aggressive total. I don't know how much action you're getting on this one. In general, the bowl games that are non-CFP, Has the action dwindled, or is it still as popular as ever betting bowl season football?
It's busy the day of the game, but it's nowhere near what it used to be.
Okay.
Day of game, you know how gambling is. They all want their action. So every game day, it's pretty crazy. But the funny thing on the UNLV is it's been mostly the other way on Ohio. So it'll be interesting to see if UNLV can put some distance in and have a cover tonight.
Yeah, they've consistently kind of played to the opponent aside from the two losses against Boise. They played a lot of close games. The only good team that they took care of pretty easily and covered was against Hawaii, so I'm curious to see what's going to happen here. All right, holiday football, Christmas Day football. It was, certainly the lineup has changed a lot because now you've got a quarterback, Josh Johnson, and Max Brosmer, and Chris Oladukun are going to be out there. So these have all turned into big spread games. First of all, what are you seeing with the Cowboys and the Commanders? That one's sitting at 7.
Well, oh joy for Christmas football in the NFL with these three games. The Cowboys, Commanders, I mean, it's either Cowboys or nothing. Mariota didn't even practice again today for the Commanders. Dak apparently is going to play the whole game. He has an opportunity to be the leading pass yardage quarterback in the NFL, so he's going to play the whole game. It's Cowboys or nothing. The only advantage the Commanders have is it's a rivalry game and they're at home, but to me it's Dallas or nothing. I think that line will go up come game time. I think it'll be 8, 8.5.
I wonder how much fight the Lions have left in them. That was a devastating victory. They thought they might have gotten it. Devastating loss last week. They thought they might have got the victory late against the Steelers. But right now, Lions are 7 on the road against the Vikings because, again, the Vikings are without J.J. McCarthy.
Yeah, that may be a good thing, though. Max Brosmer has settled down a little bit. He's had a few weeks to practice. I really like the Vikings in this game. I really do. Getting the points at home. I think the Lions are ready to throw in the towel. I mean, they ran for nothing last week. I mean, you got Jahmyr Gibbs in the backfield, and you get 15 yards total rushing for the game. I really do. I think the Vikings will be ready to play. They've won 3 in a row. They're 2 games away from being over 500. They're 7-8 on the year. They can end the year 9-8. I think the Vikings are the motivation key here. Okay. I think they're really a strong play.
Are the Chiefs completely dead in the water? I mean, come on. It's Broncos 13 now on Christmas?
Yeah, it's Travis Kelce's last game at home. So I think there will be an outpouring of Chiefs money coming in, but the Broncos defense hasn't looked that good lately, but I have a hard time. Chiefs go to Tennessee and just didn't even show up. I mean, their injury report's longer than anybody. Broncos are nothing.
The Thursday football specials are up, so make sure you check them out on William Hill. You want to download the William Hill mobile app and get an account, and you can get up to $250 in bonuses. Right now, CeeDee Lamb, boost on a parlay, 100-plus receiving yards and a touchdown, is now at plus 350. There's a Terry McLaurin combo with George Pickens, each scoring a touchdown. That's about 6-1. All right, Saturday NFL, Ravens and Packers. Packers are 2.5, and all of a sudden the Green Bay season became a big mess.
Well, it did to a certain both quarterbacks for Green Bay who played last week, both practiced today. So they've got to be going ahead with Jordan Love and his concussion and Malik Willis with – it sounds like he's going to be able to play. So we're going to be spared seeing Clayton Toon as the Packers quarterback. Now, the problem is Lamar isn't healthy either. Bad back, bad ankle, bad everything. You wonder how much Baltimore has left, and they're going up to Lambeau where it's going to be a little cold, as usual, in December. So I think the Packers are going to be fine in this game, and they're just going to roll through it. And I think it'll be a low-scoring game, though.
L.A. hosting the Texans. Texans, well, really both teams have a lot at stake here as the division's got a lot more interesting. Chargers are 2.
I think it's the biggest game of the weekend. I can't wait to watch it. Both teams, in my opinion, have Super Bowl aspirations, and they both can be considered Super Bowl contenders. Chargers at home, they say they don't have a home field advantage. I tend to disagree. I think they do fine at home. Houston, I don't know if their offense is good enough. I really like the Chargers in this game to just keep rolling right along. Hampton's getting better week by week, so they can run the ball. And if it wasn't for Stafford and May, Herbert may be the third choice for MVP.
Rick Cleaver's with us, William Hill. Let's look ahead to the CFP games, and we'll come back on the NFL on Sunday and see what we can get to. And reminder, William Hill has their parlay boost up every single day. NBA, NHL, college football, pro football, really anything you want to bet on. Right now, if you want to bet a special prop on UNLV winning this football game against Ohio, somewhere between 13 and 18 points, you can get plus 650, so over 6-1 on a big victory, two-touchdown victory in that 13-18-point range for the Rebels. All right, CFP line changes. Let's go first to the Rose Bowl. Indiana against Alabama was sitting at 7. Now, latest I saw was Indiana at 6.5 over the Crimson Tide.
Well, I think when it comes to sharp bettors, they're always looking to bet on the sharp number. If you notice, all four college games dropped off of a key number of 7, 10, 7, and even Oregon was a 1. So, I mean, the sharps come in, they get the 6.5. They hope that line will stay or drop even further. But I think Indiana, Alabama, a lot of people like Alabama in this game. The sharps obviously jumped on it early. Indiana's probably the most consistent team in college football. What you see is what you get from them every week, week in and week out. I think they can take it to Alabama.
Ray Cleaver.
Do. The Rose Bowl.
Yep.
The Rose Bowl is set up for them.
Rick Cleaver, ESPN Las Vegas, ESPN Reno. All right, Miami getting a little bit of action, I think. Line has dropped from 10 to 9. Ohio State is favored.
Yeah, Miami's getting action because it's what you saw last. But what I saw last is an incompetent offense. Ohio State scores 14 points. They win this game. So there is no doubt in my mind that Ohio State will score 14 points. Whether they cover the 10 or not, no guarantee. But Ohio State's defense will limit Miami to very little yardage. This reminds me of the Alabama-LSU game back about 10, 12 years ago when Alabama didn't allow LSU past the 50-yard line. I can see Miami having a very rough offensive day.
Next two games in the CFP. Let's get to Texas Tech and Oregon here in a second. Another parlay boost up on William Hill. If you want to bet the Mountain West in all these bowl games, you get a UNLV win, a Hawaii cover, a New Mexico win, a Fresno State cover, a San Diego State win. Five-team parlays paying 25-1, so that's a pretty big stuff for that parlay with the Mountain West. All right, Texas Tech and Oregon, Ducks are sitting solidly at 1.5.
Yeah, probably the best game of the weekend. I can't wait to watch this game. I really like Oregon, though. I really do. I think because they lost at home to Indiana, they've been underappreciated all year, and I still think they're the team to beat in the college football playoff. I have Ohio State and Oregon in the finals, and I really believe that Oregon is just better. Texas Tech only really had one tough game all year. They went on the road to Utah. They destroyed them. But this is a different animal. Is Utah Oregon? I don't even think there's a comparison. I think Oregon will beat them. We're in for a good game. It's not going to be a blowout, but I think Oregon's experience will get them through.
And then there's a rematch in the SEC, Georgia, or of SEC schools, Georgia and Ole Miss. It's from 7 down to 6.5 with the Bulldogs favored.
I haven't liked Georgia's offense all year. I really haven't. I know they win, but I haven't liked it. I think all the motivation in the world's on Ole Miss. They're trying to say we can do it without Lane. I'd like Ole Miss getting the points here. In fact, a little hunch in me says they're going to win. So the game's in New Orleans. Ole Miss will definitely have a big following there. It's almost like a mini home game. I love Ole Miss in this game.
Let's go back to the NFL to close out with some Sunday games with Ray Cleaver right here on ESPN Las Vegas and ESPN Reno. Not exactly sure what to call the Giants and the Raiders. We can call it the toilet bowl, but really in the end it's kind of the Mendoza Bowl. Whether the Giants need him or not, they would covet that number one pick to then use to have someone trade up and get a bounty in terms of cost for that number one pick. This one I think is flipped, right? We've now got Raiders favored 1.5 against the Giants. What do you think is going to happen?
Well, if the NFL had a sense of humor instead of worrying about playing three games on Christmas, this should have been a standalone Monday night game.
Yeah.
playing for the first round pick. I mean, the very first pick in the draft. I think this game is the second biggest game between the Chargers and Houston this weekend. I said I'll have my eyes glued to this game. I mean, this is who can lose. You're going to see ineptness at a quality level. This is going to be awesome to see who keeps blowing up and who keeps blowing up. Now, I do think the Raiders will win this game because Pete Carroll wants to win worse than get a first-round draft pick, because I think he knows he's not going to be around to coach that first-round pick, so he'd like to get a win on his way out the door.
Hey, Ray, we appreciate it. Thank you for coming on shortly before the holiday. Have a good holiday. I hope you have off. I hope you have a couple days off. We'll see you, buddy.
Merry Christmas to everybody out there. Have a great day.
There he is. Ray Cleaver, William Hill. Make sure you download the William Hill mobile app. You can get up to $250 in bonus bets, and then you're good to go. You can bet from anywhere on the go in the state of Nevada. Plenty of places to deposit, plenty of books to get into, the brick and mortar if you need to go in. But you're all set with the phone app once you download the William Hill mobile sports app.
It's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas and ESPN Reno.
Ted Wien's pregame show coming up here in about 25 minutes. Caleb Herring will be on that and also on the game call. He's a former quarterback with the Rebels. UNLV taking on Ohio and a good opponent across the way in the Bobcats. A good offense. The quarterback is awesome. Parker Navarro, not an unbelievable passer, but good enough that he threw for 2,200 yards and 14 touchdowns. But on the ground is where he makes his hay. And they have a 1,000-yard back. This is going to be a really – you talked about it all year, especially those edge guys and the linebackers, that conflict of assignment and stopping the run game.
I think the threat of his legs is probably the most scary thing about this offense when you think about it, because anytime you have a running quarterback, there's always like that possibility that you're playing 11-on-11 football. And most offenses that have a stagnant quarterback, you don't really count them in the run game. So that just adds another assignment to the mix. The potential for read options and gadget plays, even just extending plays with scramble drills. You know, the secondary's had trouble holding up in coverage for extended period of times during the season, and giving up those big plays off of broken plays is also something that his legs will unlock for their offense. So it is a tough task. It is a tough task. And like you said, the conflict of assignment issue has reared its head all season long. How much will the Bobcats employ some of those strategies, using read option, triple option even, to try to create some of those conflicts? That's going to be a major determining factor in this game and how the defense for UNLV is going to be able to survive this rushing attack.
And at this level, Ohio, for Group of Five, they have an expectation to win bowl games. They've won six in a row. They haven't gone to six in a row, but they've won six in a row. This group has won, I think it's three in a row. And I do think that makes a difference. There's a way to approach bowl games that make you more effective sometimes than the opponent.
You know, it's funny because I was walking around the hotel during the week with UNLV and just eavesdropping on some of the player conversations, and the amount of players that haven't played in a bowl game before, because there's a lot of transfers on this roster that weren't here for the last two with UNLV and maybe didn't go to one or play in one at their previous destination. It's interesting to hear, like, players say, yeah, I've been only a handful of players are like, yeah, I've been a bowl game every year in college. And then some players are like, oh, this is my first time. I don't know what it is.
We're talking super seniors, too, like Chief Orders and Day-Day Reynolds, who I talked to for the pregame. And Day-Day was trying to think of the bowl games he played in, and he had been in one at Florida but was hurt at other times. And then, there's a lot of guys on this team who were fourth- and fifth-year guys who really didn't log a lot of playing time elsewhere.
And it's a different thing getting ready for a bowl game because you're away from home for a week. There's all the activities. You're practicing at an unfamiliar location. Like, all these things factor into how you prepare. And if you've done it before, that definitely gives you a leg up, especially if you've done it, like you said, 3 years in a row. There's a lot of guys on this Bobcat roster have done it consistently, whereas UNLV, although they're a talented bunch, not together. They haven't participated in a bowl game. So it's interesting to see how that experience is going to play a factor.
I thought it was all business. I've only been here a couple of days, but I thought it was all business around the players. I'd heard for some of the events the players were there. They showed up, and then they were like, yeah, we're going to go back to the hotel and just chill out and get ready for the game. So I don't know how many extracurricular activities they really got involved in. I think there's focus. And the best part about this, to me, I think it's the top angle, and it speaks to Mullen and the staff, is that all the guys on the Rebels are into the game. They wanted to play in the game. They're not worried about the transfer portal right now.
And that's a big-time factor, especially in today's generation. Bowl games are losing their sting. I know people don't want to say that they are, but they're losing their sting. Guys opting out, sitting out, entering the transfer portal, you name it. But UNLV looks like they've got full participation. That's from coaching staff down to the last guy on the bench. So they'll have a cohesive unit. They won't be trying to fill in gaps with guys sitting out or potentially transferring.
Is there a chance in our final 30 seconds here, is there a chance this game is played in the teens and 20s and Ohio can control the ball a bunch and run a bunch of clock and the Rebels don't have a bunch of possessions, or are we going to see a freaking shootout?
I think we're going to see a shootout. I think Dan Mullen, we've joked about it the last few weeks, has talked about emptying the play. You can't take it to the offseason. Well, the bowl game is where you're going to really let it loose and try to be explosive. So I don't see the Rebel offense slowing down for anything. But it will be interesting to see if UNLV can stop the rushing attack and limit time of possession for the Bobcats.
I wonder if we see a play. We've seen a bunch of plays where Kalander has been split out and they've had direct snaps to running backs and then more often receivers. I wonder if we actually see someone else throw a pass.
I think Kalander's catching a pass today. That's going to be my guess. I could say that now. It's the end of the year. I think he's catching one today.
I bet you he'd like to catch a short one and then get a chance to run because he's probably a pretty good yak guy. He's got some open field in front of him. All right, Caleb, we'll be listening it up in 20 minutes for the pregame. On the way back, RJ Clifford on the Raiders.
It's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas and ESPN Reno.
Rolling towards the Frisco Bowl. UNLV up against Ohio as the pregame starts here in less than 20 minutes with Matt Nevert and Caleb Herring. RJ Clifford is with us every Tuesday, so nice enough to push back his spot as we'll get into Raiders down the stretch here and a little bit of MMA slash celeb boxing. I want to start out with the Raiders' effort in this last game. They did what they needed to do for the fans, and that is play competitively, show some good things, but also lose. I think one of the things to build on certainly is finally another one of those breakout games. He's only had like two or three of them, but Ashton Jeanty looked really good.
That was a masterclass and exactly what fans wanted from the Raiders. You couldn't have put it better. I mean, Geno Smith looked okay, still threw that pick six that we really needed. Ashton Jeanty looked fantastic, both catching the ball and running the ball. The O-line had a surprisingly pretty decent run of it, and the defense was still bad, but C.J. Stroud was worse, which kind of kept the game a lot closer than I think some of us were concerned about. Little nervous there, little edge of the seat that we might actually pull this one off the Raiders. But they, again, there we got the toilet bowl against the Giants coming up, and still got a shot at the number one pick.
Autumn Windbags podcast is going down every week with you and Mr. Wonderful. I saw some notes from last week's, and of course, your writing is excellent. You are a writer of sorts by trade, and I got hooked by this one. Brady is super horny for Mendoza.
So I got in a very big argument on the last show with Mr. Wonderful about, like, you know what? Absolutely, clearly the Raiders need a quarterback. Mendoza fits the bill, no doubt about it. But if the Raiders have the number one overall, they could get three firsts for it in a trade down. I mean, just the haul. And I think the Raiders should trade down again with whatever they got, because there's just every single position group on the Raiders, sans running back and tight end, needs starters, backups, developmental players. Like, the cupboards are just bare everywhere. So, but we had this big, big argument, and then we both kind of just said, you know what? Everything Mendoza is what Tom Brady wants. So it doesn't matter. Tom Brady's going to do what it takes to get Mendoza. Just the way he loves football, how competitive he is, the way he just cherishes his teammates, the prototypical size, just the mentality of him. I can hear Tom Brady's drool from my home in California, just how into Mendoza he's going to be. And if he has a shot to draft him, he will.
How much did you guys discuss the injury to Mahomes and the Chiefs in the future? I saw a Bills podcaster saying that Mahomes has been vastly overrated for years. He plays playground football. He will not have a second life in his career like Brady did because of diminished mobility. He won't be able to get outside and do all that playground stuff. He can't throw from the pocket. Do you think it's going to be that mediocre for Mahomes post ACL, LCL surgery?
I think he has been wowing fans because he's incredible at moments. He's dazzling when you need him to be dazzling. Fourth quarter, games on the line, the highlights on SportsCenter, the stuff that we see when we're scrolling. But he'll play three quarters of just kind of being an average guy, despite having Andy Reid, who I think is the best coach in football, a fantastic defense to keep them in games. I think he's been pretty average for long stretches. And I'm completely with this Bills podcaster. I mean, he's pretty reliant on those legs, and those things go with running quarterbacks. But I'm look, The dynasty that the Chiefs have, I think it's over. But and that's not like me talking trash or me like dynasties are hard to do. Like they're really, really everything has to go right for the NFL's built for parity. This isn't MLB. This isn't the NBA. It's every year there's new teams that go up and great teams that go down. So for everything to continue to go right for the Chiefs, Andy Reid's getting older. You know, he's not like a Pete Carroll who just seems to get younger as the years go by. Travis Kelce's flirting with retirement. They're going to have to replace all these great aging stars. Like, this is all really, really hard to do. And in the modern NFL, like, really only the Patriots have been able to do it, and they had everything going for them.
The Tankathon Bowl, whatever you want to name this thing with the Giants and the Raiders, is completely intriguing. Both teams need to lose in the worst way, although the Giants aren't looking for a quarterback at the top of the draft. You know what? Who knows? Maybe they will. Maybe they'll spin off Jackson Dart. I don't know. But there's a lot at stake. You need talent. When you're this bad, you got to get the number one pick. This game's going to be fascinating. I know fans who haven't gone to a Raiders game yet, and they're like, you know what? I want to see these two teams go at it because there's a lot at stake in freaking the second to last week of the season.
Yeah, man. It's the Tank Bowl for sure. But then it gets even more interesting, right, with the Titans just beating the Chiefs and the Raiders have the Chiefs to call out the season. Like, even losing to the Giants in the second-to-last game doesn't guarantee anything with how bad the Chiefs are with a third-string quarterback. And
we've got a slow time right now, and I know you're mostly off from covering combat sports, but I'm sure you took a look at Jake Paul and Anthony Joshua. Mm-hmm. I'm going to say right out of the gates, I love combat sports. I love boxing. But no, I love this fight. I thought the fight was awesome. I thought the hunted, trying to find a way to be evasive, and he did a decent job for a couple of rounds. And then we found out that at 216 pounds, whatever he's doing to be on the 216, he's bloated. Jake Paul just lost his gas tank and then started trying to wrestle and go down to the ground. But I thought him running and Joshua trying to deliver for boxing a knockout was fascinating.
You do love your wrestlers, which explains why you like this boxing match with Jake Paul, like 17 failed double legs. Look, there was two things about this fight that I was concerned about. And this is coming from a very, very purist combat sports analyst, fan, guy that works in it. Two things I was very, very worried about. I was worried that it would outdraw Canelo Crawford because then it's telling Netflix, oh, yeah, the circus matches, the clown shows, like that's what people want. Let's do more of that and less throwing resources at good boxing. It didn't. It did $33 million for Paul Joshua, $41.4 million for Canelo Crawford. So that's good. That's really quality, proper boxing beats circus matches. Good. That's good.
Okay.
The other thing, I was worried that it would be fixed. I was worried that, like, okay, dude, like, Jake Paul, you're going from a bantamweight to a heavyweight champion. What is this going to look like? And Jake Paul embarrassed himself, floundered around, and he fought like a YouTuber that's in a ring with a former world heavyweight boxing champion that can break his jaw when he wants to. So it was a clown show. It wasn't entertaining for me. But as a big picture guy, I'm just kind of like, just don't hurt the thing I love about combat sports. The fight went 2-for-2. It certainly wasn't fixed, and it didn't draw as much attention as an actual, real, credible fight.
I saw that Israel Adesanya said he thought Joshua took it easy on him early on. I guess I'm a sucker for this one. I thought Jake Paul actually was pretty evasive and was good with his movement, and it's a heavyweight. He's 6'5 and 245 pounds. If you move a bunch on him, it's not going to be as easy for him to cut off the ring. And then when Paul finally got tired, that's when he got him, but Adesanya thought that Joshua carried him for the beginning of the fight.
I've heard that a lot I hear that mostly from boxing purists when we go to like Mayweather McGregor, right? Where I don't think Mayweather carried McGregor. I think he knew the only possible 1% chance I can lose is if this guy catches me early, but he's going to gas out.
Right.
I think Anthony Joshua thought the same thing. It's like, this guy is going to gas himself out. Quick example. When I box with my boxing trainer, for about two rounds, we're pretty even. But I'm expending 100 calories for every one he's burning. I'm all over the place throwing 30 punches, dodging and taking these big motions. Whereas my boxing coach is slight slip, little slip, gentle jab, and he's just very efficient with his movements. Anthony Joshua knew the same things. Like, this guy's going to run around like a chicken with his head cut off and eventually going to gas out, and then I'll just pick my shot and get my highlight, cash my check, and go home.
I want Jake Paul to box another high-level guy and, like, right away. I want someone at 175 or 190 who is a high-level fighter, if not a champ, to give him a chance. And then I think it'll go even worse for him because I think someone
I think Jake Paul will pitch it like, hey, I was, you know, I was going against a giant. Now I'm going to go against a guy in my own weight class. He may not have as easy a time cutting weight to get down to 190, but I would love to see a 175er who can't get a big fight move up and fight Jake Paul. And I think he will get crushed. He will get picked apart. He will get busted up again. Let's do it. And I'm not going to say finish this thing. Then you throw Jake Paul back into the stable of celeb boxing matches, but get him another big fight. Why not?
Do you think that Jake Paul losing ends this? Because
no.
I don't think it matters.
No, Logan... no, I don't think it does. But I think to answer the question for the boxing people who are like, oh, that wasn't good enough, put him in with David Benavidez, and Benavidez will be the smaller guy, and watch what Benavidez does to him.
This is I've always wanted to see this. This is exact opposite of what the Jake Paul experience is. I want to see him against like a top 60 boxer. Like okay. A top 60 cruiserweight. Like I that's what I want. Have him fight some guy who's like 13-3 so we can kind of gauge where he's at. But that's obviously not what this is about. This isn't about finding how good Jake Paul is as a boxer. It's about getting as many 19-year-olds in the front row doing live Twitch streams while they're watching a celeb get their butt kicked in. Like that's kind of what it is. And so it's so hard to like to turn off my combat sports brain. Yeah. And go back to my 17-year-old brain and try to get what's out of it. Because like how I started the segment is just like, I'm just watching this hoping it doesn't ruin things for everybody else. And then getting to the point of like, what's going to actually be fun? It's hard to get my brain there.
Yeah, you're old. RJ Clifford's with us. He's much younger than I am, but you sound old. You can follow RJ up on Twitter at RJ Clifford MMA. I'm going to tell you where I feel old, and maybe I'm missing out on what the work is here, is next up, going to be old fighters going 1-on-3 against a bunch of small guys. Cause I don't know who this Jack Doherty guy is. I guess the kid is popular. I guess he's got a big YouTube following. I guess he picks fights and busts people's chops all over. And to watch on video, a 1-on-3 fight where Andre Arlovsky is just pivoting and throwing and kicking and throwing and pivoting and throwing. And then the bodyguard for Doherty's like, yeah, I'm not getting involved in this.
Yeah. How great's that? The bodyguard's the one that's like, nah, I'll let the teenagers handle this. I'm good.
Hey, I know former UFC heavyweight champion. I ain't corralling him, brother. You wanted to start this, you finish
ear.
It.
Yeah, and a nose that can smell around corners. It's like, I'm not messing with that guy. That's a thing. Look it up. Look up 3-on-1 MMA. I think it's I think it's Circus Fight that does it, or maybe a Russian promotion.
Oh,
but no, go down that rabbit hole. Think of any imagination of some sort of combat sport that it's happened. 3-on-1 knights with like shields and swords, 400 pounders versus little people. Like, use your imagination. It's out there.
It's amazing. And listen, when I did Cage Rider for Yahoo, I would absolutely cover this. This is like right up my alley, this kind of thing. But I looked on MMA Junkie this morning and I was like, wait, there's multiple stories on Jack Doherty. I'm like, what is going on here? Is this going to be the future? I really don't know what's happening anymore. I don't know, like the whole Puka thing with that Aiden Ross guy. And I guess that's why I just don't get it up on social media. And I have like very little traffic as compared to these S shows. And I guess old man Cofield needs to start doing this stuff and picking fights in public. And it's a weird time, man. Now I sound really old and I feel old. I don't get it.
I had to do the Google, the Jack Doherty Google, like who is this guy? Why is he famous? What do I care? And the only positive that came out of it was I ended up following his ex-fiance on Instagram, and she's a fantastic follow. That's Jack Doherty's positive contribution to RJ Clifford's life.
RJ, have an awesome holiday. I hope you got all your Christmas shopping done, Ski.
Of course, buddy. Merry Christmas. Happy New Year. And yes, Christmas shopping's done because I shop for one, the wife, and she does all the other shopping. So happy wife, happy life. Remember that, everybody. Happy New Year.
That's RJ Clifford from the Autumn Windbags. A little Raiders talk, a little boxing talk. I don't know. Jack Doherty. Coming up next, UNLV goes for its 11th win of the season, the Frisco Bowl, third straight year in a bowl game after all those years of struggling for UNLV football. For UNLV fans, enjoy it. Should be a good game. Should be a fast turf indoor stadium here in Frisco, Texas. Pre-game is coming up. Matt Neverett, Caleb Herring, live from the Little Jerry Dome at the Ford Center. That'll do it for Cofield and Company here on this Tuesday. Enjoy the game. See if the UNLV can get a win, and then we'll talk to you after the holiday right here on ESPN Las Vegas.